Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, July 11th, 2025. We turn first to page one, where the main story is headlined, Created with Purpose. Bloomington woman publishes book inspired by her daughter's medical journey. This story is datelined Bloomington. Bloomington author Shelby Vincent will never forget when her daughter Naomi asked her, Mommy, when am I going to be normal like everybody else? Naomi, 5, was born with a tumor at the base of her spine, making her one of about every 40,000 babies born with this particular condition. After multiple surgeries, Naomi developed nerve damage that impacts her bowel function, and while she has to use catheters and enemas, you would never know by looking at her that she has medical conditions, her mother said. We are all unique and perfectly designed, Shelby Vincent said. It's really important to embrace the diversity of everybody and reassure everyone that you were created with a purpose. You are created to be here, uniquely made and perfect exactly as you are. Still, after Naomi asked that question about being, quote, normal, Vincent started thinking about other children she knows who have medical conditions. Like my son, one of his best friends is visually impaired, and my best friend's child had open-heart surgery, Vincent said. All these kids kept flooding in my brain that were going through things. Those thoughts led her to writing a children's book that she titled Perfect Through and Through. The book will be formally released on Tuesday, but Vincent is hosting a launch party from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Sunday at Kegler's Pub inside Pheasant Lanes, at 804 North Hersey Road in Bloomington. The rhyming book features 28 real-life children with medical challenges or journeys told in first person. Each child is illustrated to look just like them, featuring their favorite things, along with a butterfly specially chosen for each character. And the cover of the book shows Naomi sitting alongside her two siblings, Nolan, 7, and Penelope, 3. Most of the children in the book live locally, although Vincent has said some live outside Bloomington Normal. Books will be available for purchase during Sunday's party, and attendees will have the opportunity to meet some of the kids featured in the book. For those who cannot attend the event, the book is available for purchase online at perfectthroughandthrough.com and on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Vincent began writing the book in December, talking to parents she knew and reaching out over social media to find participants. The idea, she said, was to represent a variety of children for who they are outside of their medical challenges. Jenny Bassey's son, August, age 8, has heart problems, and when her friend Vincent approached her about participating in the book, she was happy to help. The Bassey family lives in Bloomington. I obviously was so excited and thrilled because it was an amazing honor to be asked, especially for your kid, to have them be a part of something so special and feel special, said Jenny Bassey of Bloomington. August was born with congenital heart disease, and 8 weeks after he was born, he experienced heart failure. And then, while awaiting open-heart surgery, he had a sepsis infection with seizures. He was later diagnosed with mild cerebral palsy affecting his left leg. Jill Runyon of Bloomington, who taught Naomi at Metcalf, has a son, Simon, in the same grade as Vincent's son, Nolan. She saw a Facebook post in which Vincent was searching for a child to feature who has needed assistance with mental health. I talked to my daughter, who was excited to share her story and make everyone aware the stigma needs to go away, Jill Runyon said of daughter Gwen Runyon, age 9. Gwen has been going to therapy for a year to tackle anxiety, which her mother said comes from her many talents and passions, resulting in a lot of big feelings. It's important to seek out help, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's something that makes you special, and it's important to learn to cope with that, Runyon said. Maeve and Nicole Rave of Normal also learned of the book through social media. Obviously, we said yes, Matt Rave said. It is a very cool idea, showing kids with all sorts of medical issues going on that not everybody is the same. The Rave's daughter, Maeve, who will be 3 on Saturday, began struggling at only 8 days old to move her hips and lower legs. Extensive testing revealed that she had a condition, meaning that a tumor between the bones of her legs was causing them to break. The bones in her legs was causing them to break, and that her bones would have little to no chance at healing. She was only the 27th in the world to be diagnosed with this type of tumor, and the only in her age group. Due to her fracture at birth from the tumor, her parents made the difficult decision to have Maeve's lower leg amputated. Matt Rave spoke about how Vincent's book has opened up opportunities for representation. "You can still be represented," he said. "There's a lot with count your 10 fingers and count your 10 toes. Well, our daughter was amputated, so that was hard." Bassey agreed. "To normalize that everybody might be going through something, even if it's not visual, there's so many people out there who might look normal, but everybody is going through something," she said. August's cousin, Mabel, died of Batten disease, a rare genetic disorder that affects the nervous system and brain, 2 years before he was born. So for the book, he chose for his butterfly to be yellow, which was Mabel's favorite color. Mabel was 4 when she died and was from Clinton. Gwen chose a light purple and teal butterfly, which are her favorite colors, because she finds them to be calming, Jill Runyon said. And Maeve's butterfly is also representative of her favorite color, which is pink. And our next front page story is about insurance. Headlined, State Farm Home Rates Up 27%. Insurer says hike in August driven by catastrophic losses. This is a Chicago Tribune story, datelined Bloomington. As Texas grapples with the massive flooding that struck Hill Country and killed at least 119 people during the July 4th weekend, many Illinois homeowners will soon see their home insurance rates skyrocket due to the increase in such extreme weather events. State Farm is raising homeowners' insurance rates in Illinois by a whopping 27.2% beginning August 15th, according to a filing with the state last month. The rate hike, one of the largest in the state's history, will affect nearly 1.5 million policyholders, and new policyholders will pay the higher rates as of July 15th. In its filing, Bloomington-based State Farm said the rate increase is driven by catastrophic losses related to extreme weather events in Illinois. "Over the last several years, our catastrophe provision has proven to be inadequate when compared to our actual catastrophe loss experience," State Farm said in the filing. "While there is volatility associated with extreme weather events, our Illinois catastrophe losses have exceeded the year's catastrophe provision in 13 of the last 15 years, signaling the provision used in rating has been insufficient in recent history." A State Farm spokesperson did not immediately respond to a request for comment on Wednesday. In February, Northbrook-based Allstate raised homeowner insurance rates by 14.3% for nearly 248,000 Illinois customers, as the broader insurance industry struggles to keep up with the increasing frequency of extreme weather events across the country. State Farm, for example, has received nearly 13,000 claims and paid out more than $4.2 billion to California homeowners who suffered losses during the devastating wildfires that raged across the Los Angeles area in January, according to an update posted this week on its website. In 2024, Allstate raised homeowners' insurance rates in Illinois by 12.7%, while State Farm implemented a 12.3% increase. Homeowners' insurance rates have been spiking across the country, increasing 40.4% over the past 6 years. According to LendingTree's State of Home Insurance report for 2025, published in June, Illinois had the 7th highest increase among states, rising 59.5% between 2019 and 2024, the report found. And the highest cumulative rate increase Increases were in Colorado, Nebraska, Utah, Arizona, and Minnesota, according to the LendingTree report. Illinois ranked 22nd in average annual home insurance costs at $2,743 per year, according to the report. The impending 27.2% rate increase would add about $746 per year to that total for Illinois homeowners who have State Farm insurance. And our last front page story is from the Cutting Board column titled "Dig In for Great Potato Salad." Summer is the time for backyard cookouts, and though we've already passed Independence Day, the weather still calls for more outdoor cooking with friends and neighbors. Allow me to paint a picture, will you? Children laughing and running under a lush blue sky, nary a cloud in sight, the smell of charcoal fire and the clackety clank of tongs, a kiss the cook apron adorning whomever is stationed at the grill, and overfilled ice chests of long-necked bottles sweating in the warm sunlight. A large bowl of potato salad flecked with raisins. Shudder. I'm not here to tell you what you can and cannot do, but if you're like me, and apparently anyone on the internet, few things ruin a cookout like dried fruit mixed with potatoes and mayonnaise. So, let's talk about this classic American summer side. Sharpen your knives and leave the fruit in the cupboard because we are making potato salad from scratch. First up, we need the veg. I picked up a bunch of celery, a fresh onion, and a quart of baby gold potatoes from the Iurger Family Farm Stand at the downtown Bloomington Farmers Market. They're a new addition to the market this year, but that does not mean they're a new farm. The family has been growing food in Minunk for at least four generations, said Lowell Iurger, the town's current owner. And this last name is spelled I-O-E-R-G-E-R, and I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. On Wednesday, Lowell took some time off from working in the fields to talk about his farm with me over the phone. His ancestor worked for the railroad in the late 1800s, he said. He got an acre a day for labor. And over time, the family ended up owning hundreds of acres of land. Because the family was so large and inheritances thinned, the family farm is down to 180 acres, he said, 30 of which are the garden where they grow flowers and food. Who knows how many different varieties of crops I've got? I couldn't even tell you. Hundreds, he said. While the majority of his farm is industrial corn, soybean, and a bit of wheat, Iurger, like most farmers I've met, thoroughly enjoys growing food for people. It's a whole lot more rewarding to grow something and actually sell it to the person that's going to be consuming it. I get to talk to the people that consume my food, he said. And as for how to prepare the food, though, he's a little out of his element, he said. Have my wife do it. I'm not much of a cook, he chuckled. She takes care of putting it on the table. There are a lot of ways to make something resembling potato salad from all over the world. There's German potato salad that's served warm and sauced with vinegar. There's a Russian dish called Olivier salad, borrowed from the French, that has cooked peas, carrots, and ham swimming in mayonnaise. But we're going to focus on an American summer version, dressed with homemade mayonnaise and served chilled. This one is loosely based on my grandmother's recipe. Unlike most store-bought potatoes, these still had some dirt on them, and the skins were a little more papery because they hadn't spent much time in the ground. After a quick scrub, I set them aside to dry. Then I soaked the celery to clean it and peeled the onion. I diced the potatoes into cubes about the size of my thumbnail. And all of these went into a pot with cold, unsalted water and a bay leaf. For this recipe, I like my potato chunks to still hold their form and not turn into mush. Instead of covering and boiling the snot out of them, I brought the pot to a gentle simmer and placed a wooden spoon on top to prevent it boiling over. Homemade mayonnaise is actually easier than you think. If you'll recall, we made some in June for our ranch dressing. And while the potatoes were cooking, I gathered what I needed for the emulsion. One large egg, some apple cider vinegar, yellow mustard, salt, and 1 cup of neutral oil. Oh, and I had some roasted garlic. For this, just cut off the top of a bulb of garlic, place in some foil with a splash of oil, and slow roast for about 30 to 35 minutes. Crucially, for this technique, you need an immersion blender and a container that is just narrowly wider than the blade. Otherwise, the mixture will break and never thicken. I used a wide-mouth mason jar. Add the oil to the jar with 1 tablespoon each of mustard and vinegar. These are essential to the emulsion process. Add whatever spices and aromatics you like. In this case, I used white pepper and roasted garlic. Crack the egg on the stovetop and watch it slip through the cooking grates and onto the burner. Shout, "Fun!" and spend the next several minutes cleaning up the egg and burner, making sure that it can still light on its own. Grab another egg and crack this one into the jar with the oil. Immerse the immersion blender into the mixture and blend for a few seconds. Once you notice the mixture start to thicken, move it up and down to incorporate all of the oil, and salt to taste. Finally, dice half a large onion and about 3/4 cup of celery. The potatoes are cooked when the back of a knife breaks through them with a little resistance. Drain the potatoes. In this application, I don't want to save any of the starchy potato water. And once the potatoes are cool, and all add all of the veg to a large bowl. Now, I don't want mayonnaise soup for this. I want the veg dressed but not drowning in mayo. Add a little at a time, making sure to mix thoroughly. Less is more. And once you reach the consistency you like, taste for seasoning. I was feeling frisky and had some grilled corn on hand, so I added that too for a pop of sweetness. This potato salad is best served the next day. It's cool, refreshing, garlicky, with a neat crunch from the corn throughout. Perfect for a summer cookout. And if you are a farmer or a producer and would like to talk with me for this column, you can call at 309-820-3275 or email daniel.alkire@lee.net. And be sure to check back next time to find out what we're chopping up on the cutting board. And we turn now to some local and state news. This story is headlined, "Jail Suit Settlement Likely. Terms Not Disclosed for Claim of Medical Mistreatment." This story is Dateline Bloomington. Members of the McLean County Board's Finance Committee have recommended that the county settle with a former jail inmate who was allegedly denied medication resulting in seizures and injury. While court records indicate the two sides have agreed to settle, county officials will not release the terms that were considered by the board members, saying the case is still pending. McLean County Assistant State's Attorney Don Rood said the terms of the settlement could not be disclosed at this time due to pending legal matters. A Freedom of Information Act request by the Pantograph for the settlement agreement was denied because there was no final settlement agreement at this time and no physical documentation regarding this case was presented during the meeting. Until any sort of matter is completely resolved, in our view, we could consider it pending, Ruth said. In her lawsuit, Latasha Rayford alleged that her son, Levante Rayford, did not receive his medication, and as a result, he suffered at least 3 seizures on June 27, 2019, at approximately 1:30 p.m., 3:30 p.m., and 3:57 p.m., before being taken to the hospital due to his injuries because Levante had not received his medication. A report released in May 2020 found that Levante Rayford had suffered an eye injury after falling and hitting his head after the 3rd seizure. The suit named a number of defendants, including the McLean County Sheriff's Office and then Sheriff John Sandage. The Sheriff's Office declined to comment on the case. Levante Rayford was facing aggravated battery charges after authorities said he threw liquid at a nurse during a hospital visit on June 26, 2019. Later that same day, his mother dropped off at the jail the anti-seizure medication he was supposed to be taking twice a day, once in the morning and once in the evening. All criminal charges from this incident were eventually dropped. After the jail staff, despite the jail staff receiving several reminders, Latasha Rayford said the staff told her he did not get his medication because they had not received verification of the prescription from a medical professional, and without that order, the staff could not provide the medication, they said. Under the Illinois Administrative Code, jail employees are required to obtain verification of prescribed medications no later than the time interval specified for administration of the medication on the prescription container. According to jail policy, inmates entering the jail with prescription medication will continue to receive it as prescribed. Administration of the medication is to be completed in a timely manner following verification and an order from the jail physician, according to legal documents. The next day, Latasha Rayford contacted her son's physician. The doctor sent the McLean County Jail a list of medications that Levante Rayford was prescribed, which jail staff received at about 10:45 a.m. on June 27, 2019, the lawsuit said. However, Levante Rayford would suffer three seizures after the list was sent. In February 2024, a motion for summary judgment was granted for all but five named defendants in the case against McLean County. Consideration and authorization for a settlement in this case is expected to come before the full McLean County Board during its Thursday meeting. Levante Rayford would eventually be admitted to Chester Mental Health Center on August 4, 2019, under court order, despite a psychiatrist testifying that he was fit to stand trial. But according to a report by the State Human Rights Authority, during the 2 weeks he spent in the Southwest Illinois facility, Levante Rayford had Dilantin toxicity from receiving too much of that medication. Toxicity from Dilantin, an anti-seizure medication, can result in tremors, lack of muscle control, trouble swallowing, altered mental state, seizures, and coma. The same report also stated Chester staff placed Rayford in a chokehold and body slammed him after an argument over a towel Rayford was using to cover burn scars. The neck injuries he suffered in these incidents required surgery. Her son's treatment prompted Latasha Rayford to file a second lawsuit against Chester Mental Health Center and three staff members. Over the course of the Chester case, charges against all but one named defendant have been dismissed. A settlement conference related to charges of excessive force and failure to intervene against the remaining defendant is set for Thursday. In the McLean County lawsuit, the parties last month reported to the court that they had settled. A judge ordered them to file a formal agreement to dismiss the matter by July 17th. And this next story is titled, Man Accused of Child Sex Abuse, Dateline Bloomington. A Bloomington man agreed to be detained in the McLean County Jail after he was charged this week with 10 offenses across two cases involving sexual abuse of children. Daniel D. Northern, age 40, appeared in custody Wednesday before Judge Amy McFarland for a detention hearing in which the judge was to determine whether he should be detained or released pending trial. In his first case, Northern is charged with five counts of predatory criminal sexual assault, Class X felonies, and four counts of criminal sexual assault, Class I felonies. These charges involve one minor victim, with the abuse starting when they were younger than 13 and continuing over multiple years, according to court documents. And in his second case, Northern is charged with one count of predatory criminal sexual assault, a Class X felony, also involving one victim younger than 13. For both cases, the dates of the charged offenses span from September 2022 to December 2024. Before Assistant State's Attorney Daniel Guido could give a probable cause statement for the alleged offenses, Assistant Public Defender Vivi Fan said her client wished to concede to the state's petitions to detain him on the grounds of dangerousness in each case. She stipulated to probable cause for each case and to his detention, so Guido did not read the statements or provide details about the cases. According to a news release from the Bloomington Police Department, the investigation in Northern began on July 8th after a report was made to a patrol officer. Northern was arrested the same day without incident. The Bloomington Police Department's Criminal Investigation Division worked with the Children's Advocacy Center and the Department of Children and Family Services for victim interviews and support, the department said. Collaborative efforts of our community stakeholders, along with keen investigative skills and effective prosecutions, are paramount, Chief Jamal Symington said in the news release. Thanks to the prosecutors, advocacy organizations, and DCFS for working with our officers and detectives to bring justice to the victims in this very unfortunate case. Anyone with information related to these cases is asked to contact Detective Kurt Moss at 309-434-2534 or C. Moss, that's spelled M-A-A-S, at cityblm.org. And to submit an anonymous tip, contact the Crime and Intelligence Analysis Unit at 309-434-2963 or email ciau at cityblm.org or text BPD tips followed by a space, then your tip information to 847-411. And Northern will be back in court July 25th. For an arraignment. And this next story is headlined Bloomfield Leaving County Board. McLean County's 3rd District, which covers most of the western and southwestern portions of the county, is in need of a new board member. McLean County Board Chair Elizabeth Johnston said Republican board member Lindsay Bloomfield announced her resignation via email effective July 4th. Bloomfield cited family considerations and employment conflicts as the reasons she was no longer able to serve her constituents, Johnston said. We are charged as public servants to create meaningful change, to build something greater than ourselves for the people we are fortunate to serve, Bloomfield wrote. It has been a great honor to work alongside the community and colleagues to advance that mission as a member of the McLean County Board. Bloomfield could not immediately be reached for comment Thursday. When a vacancy occurs on the county board, applications and resumes must be submitted to the Office of the County Administrator by noon on the Thursday prior to the executive committee meeting of the month the appointment will be made. But on Monday, the McLean County Rules Subcommittee recommended the deadline be changed to 4 p.m., 7 days prior to the executive committee meeting. Johnston said this change brings the application period in line with every other submission for consideration before the board. And once the county board votes on Thursday to formally adopt these changes, Johnston said the application process will be officially announced for Bloomfield's seat. And today's Flick Fact question is, with 90 buildings to maintain and preserve and no university fire station, how much does Illinois State University pay annually to the town of Normal for fire protection? $655,500, $225,000, $93,000, or nothing? And the answer is, the two have an intergovernmental agreement that's updated annually with a new reimbursement rate reflecting the increased municipal costs of providing fire protection. Last year, ISU paid $655,500. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, July 11th, 2025. I look forward to reading part two with you next.